Welcome back to The Brandon White Show, where we have conversations worth listening to give you an edge to win in your business and your life. I'm your host, Brandon White. Here we go. Definitely remind me of England with that bare wall and all that noise.
Yeah, it's not as exciting as Ibiza. I definitely miss home a lot because that's home for me. England is my family's place and I like to come and see them, but Ibiza is very much home for me.
What's the, that seems like a party place, Emma.
It has such another side to the island. I think it is a party place. It's got that side and it's got the, but what I find it's got something for every side of your personality. Like the nature there is absolutely stunning. The hiking, the community side of the island, like people really care there about you and about the way you see the world, the different people that come through. Like I've met some incredible people there, the entrepreneurs, and mainly for me as well, it's the sea, getting in the sea there and feeling so connected. There's just something about the island that's really special and it's more of a feeling than something I can put into words, I think.
Seems like it is a year-round Burning Man. Burning Man.
This is my dream to go to Burning Man.
Is it your dream to go to Burning Man?
I'd love to go.
Well, you should come and go to Burning Man.
In the winter, it's very quiet. In the winter, it's very relaxed, it's almost like you take a break from life. Like you go into a hibernation period and you really relax and you just connect with the world and you connect with nature. And then in the summer, you come out and you just bloom and you really enjoy life. And the parties are amazing, but there's still so much other things going on in the summer as well. Because of the influx of people, you meet some really interesting people, some artists, creatives, entrepreneurs, people that are very open-minded, different ways of seeing the world, different ways of seeing life. But I think what brings everyone to Ibiza is that it is an open-minded place. So like Burning Man, like you said, that place is open-minded. People there can be creative. They can talk about whatever is on their heart, whatever's on their mind. And there's no fear of judgment or fear of people trying to change your way of seeing the world. Like your way of seeing the world is embraced.
Yeah, it's definitely people are open. You seem like the type of person who would enjoy Burning Man. So you should put that on your list.
It is. I was actually looking at Burning Man outfits on Pinterest this morning.
So
funny you say that. Yeah, I was looking at, I feel like in a past life, I was a mermaid or something. I love the water. So I was like looking at like mermaid outfits.
Well, for listeners, Emma and I weren't going to record, but Emma seems to be in a very talkative mood. So I'm going to give it, we're going to give it a try. I think it's evening there, isn't it? You're in England.
Yeah, it's 5:30 in the evening.
And I found Emma through a windy road of some Twitter thread of somebody who had a podcast. And then I checked out his podcast and had a lot of interesting people. And I saw that, I think the title was Spiritual Advisor or something of that.
I think it was like Limitless Love. I was like, oh, cool. That's cute.
And yeah, Limitless Love. And then there was something else that caught my eye. And then I started listening. And then you and I were talking about this before. I just have a distaste for coaches. But when you came on and said that you were a spiritual advisor, and then I started listening to you, I thought that you had a lot to offer and a different perspective in what you talk about, which I'll let you talk about it with space and things like that. But my first question for you really was, why do you think people struggle so much?
I want to touch on what you said about spiritual advisor first, actually.
Okay.
Because something that came to me, I work with different people in my life just to open my own awareness. And I was speaking to a friend the other day and I said, we go through these transitions in life where there's a box, you know, we live in by the box, then we think out the side of the box. And then we go to this place where there is no box. So even the label of spiritual advisor, I really think I wouldn't even apply any labels to myself. I just see myself as this kind of space that allows people to see themselves in that space. So these labels we use, we use language to communicate what we're trying to say, but really the essence of what we do is really experienced when you're in the frequency of that individual who's actually showing you what they do, who's taking you through their work or whatever it is that you do. You know, the word engineer, you don't really know what an engineer is until you actually do it and experience it. So to answer your second question,
I got a question. I'm not going to let you go there quite yet. So if you like to just think of yourself as space, which is a very interesting way to describe what you do, how do you market yourself? Because sometimes you have to give people what they ask for. You have to sell people what they ask for, but give them what you need, what they need.
Yes. So that's kind of how I was doing business. And that's what I actually let go of, because to be honest, it didn't resonate with my heart. It didn't resonate with my truth, the way of presenting myself in a way that was necessary in order for people to see me and reach out to me and then work with me and invest in me. And don't get me wrong, I'm all for sharing yourself and putting yourself out there. I would celebrate myself every day, and the work that I do is so powerful. And at the same time, I have a different perspective whereby I think that everyone has a gift. My gift was never marketing. My gift was never creating email lists or social media. My gift is what I do. My work is the space that I hold, is the words that I share. So I let go of everything in order to just tune in with what's my gift and how can I hone in on my gift. And because I have a deep faith in life, I believe that the more that I hone in on my gift, the more that I enhance the way that I show up in the world, the people around me will naturally gravitate towards me because of my frequency, because of my consciousness, and all of those boxes that need filling in terms of like someone who's there to support me with the marketing side of things, someone who's there to support me with that will come in, and I will meet the right people. I'll meet the right opportunities. And I marketed myself, you know, I had myself on social media, I did the email list, I did the things, and not one client I got ever came through that. Clients I received were people that met me, and then it was either quite a quick resonance and they knew they needed to work for me, or like there was someone who was one of my good friends. It was her husband. He got to know me over a year. We just built up like this trust. And one day he just was like, he was about to go and buy a company. He was going from being a director of a company to actually going through an acquisition. And he just knew that he wanted me through that period. So he took me on that way. So it was either someone who's kind of resonated or someone who built that trust. So then I started asking, okay, so how do I market myself? Well, I'm me. The more I'm me, the more the right people will come into my life, the raw opportunities will come. And yes, that is uncomfortable as fuck, because you have to be in position sometimes. Sorry,
I'm only laughing because it is what is true is funny. And I went to a restaurant in New York where they had a sheet that basically told you what the rules were. Mm. And one of them was, we say fuck a lot. And if you don't fucking like it, you can get the fuck out. And on the menu has a daily menu, and then it has things every fucking day. So proximity. I think people in England say F as a noun, adjective.
Totally. Pronoun. They do. And it's in all of my poetry, you know, like it's just, I think it's a part of our experience. You know, it's not like wrong and right don't really apply. I think, you know, there's obviously morally wrong things that we don't want to intentionally hurt people, but the concept of right and wrong is really depends on what lens you're looking at it through. So through my expression, I like using those words. So
I totally interrupted you.
This is when I have to find myself back, but whatever comes through now is right. Right.
So you're just Emma. You're not, you sort of like print the symbol.
So I think like kind of rolling back on what I was saying about this space element, and I've completely lost track of where I was. Well, you have to ask me a new fresh question.
I know. you said the F word and you just threw me.
I know.
Threw me off. But you basically said that you were talking about your friend's husband who was buying a company.
Oh yeah. So people resonate with me, or people develop this trust with me, and then they choose to work with me. So then I really ask myself, well, all the marketing and all the things that I'm trying really hard to do is not working. Doesn't mean that they don't work. Doesn't mean that I won't use them in the future when I have those people that are in those positions working alongside partnership with me. supporting me with those things. But I really wanted to just hone in on what I'm good at, what I can give to the world, my gift to this world, and then create the space by doing that to have people come into my field who are gifted in what they do. And then we're supporting each other. That's what business is. It's partnership. And I don't want to be trying to do everything. I want to be doing what I'm uniquely gifted in, and then creating the space for people to come in and support me where they're uniquely gifted in. And so really, to answer your question, like, how did I market myself? How do I bring myself out? It's being myself. It's being myself. And like I said, that's what I saw. I said it's sometimes uncomfortable as fuck to be in that position, because you see how everyone else is doing it. You see how the world is doing it. You see how things should be done in business. You see how things.
Why should they be done?
I'm talking of outside world. There shoulds, you know, you need to do this in order to be successful, right? Just lots of different opinions, lots of different ways of doing things. But the thing I've stood by, and the thing that I've practiced and I'm still practicing and strengthening, is the ability to trust myself and my intuition. And what did my intuition say? My intuition said, let this all go. Let this all go. Follow your heart. Do what you're good at. And the right opportunities will come. And why that's uncomfortable is because you have to face every single fear that you have that says that that's not true. Because trusting that path, practicing that path, it's not an easy path to practice. It's something that requires a deep level of faith, not only in yourself, but also in life and those around you. And recognizing, okay, when I trust myself, what gets to happen? I love that question. When I trust myself, what gets to happen? And the magic that I've seen when I do that, and the things that I've seen that, for example, my intuition was telling me to go to Bali, and I didn't follow it. And I went to go to Colombia instead because of a few different reasons. And then I didn't get on my plane.
They didn't let me on my plane.
So that to me was a huge lesson of like, just keep trusting that little voice inside of you. And everyone's intuition shows up in different ways. Mine communicates to me through my poetry, but it's something that I've come aware of over, you know, a long time of practicing deep silence and meditation and connection with self. But maybe yours comes in you hear things, maybe you see things, maybe you smell things. It's all unique to all of us, but it's more about learning to discern the different voices and seeing how they all serve you. But there's that little quiet one that's taking you to what you really want to experience. And what I want to experience is what my heart and soul wants. I want to experience peace. I want to experience fulfillment, true joy, true wealth, not an illusion that is created on my own past traumas of needing to try hard, needing to prove myself. So that's what I would say I'd do now, is I'd just be myself, and I trust that the right opportunities, the right people will come. And it seems to have worked in the past, and now I'm doubling down on what's worked in the past.
Do you think that when, let's just take the Columbia example,
yeah,
our listeners didn't get to listen to you and I talking, but you tried to get on the plane and you didn't have a ticket that was leaving Columbia, so the people in England said you can't get on the plane, which I don't quite understand, because what if you wanted to stay in Columbia? Isn't that your choice? But that's probably a separate discussion. And you don't get on the plane, and you were going to go,
to go to Bali originally before I booked Columbia. Yeah.
Right. So you don't get on the plane to Columbia, and you attribute it, mm-hmm, that's the energy, that's sort of the universe talking to you. And I'm not disagreeing with you here, but I am asking a question. Do you think that we as humans rationalize that was the energy that was happening because we're uncomfortable that the world is actually totally random, and mm-hmm, we don't, if we face that was a random occurrence and it really wasn't a message that you should have gone to Bali, that creates a bigger question in us that results in an enormous amount of anxiety, uncertainty, and fear?
Mm-hmm. It depends what perspective you look at it through. And I think all perspectives are valid. which is sounds like a diplomatic answer, but I do think there's a lot of truth in that. Depends on your experience, depends on the way you see the world. The way I see the world, the way I experience the world, I believe in my heart that that was a redirection from myself. So it sounds weird to say from myself, because I think unconsciously I didn't really want to go. I think unconsciously I was choosing to go because my intentions for going were to go and stay in the jungle and essentially isolate myself and just kind of start anew, start a fresh foundation. I'd given up my business.
Why do you want to isolate yourself?
Well, that was what I wanted at the time, not now. But at the time I wanted that because I think I saw myself as a huge failure because I'd realized that the business that I built wasn't right for me and I wanted to take a different direction. And now I see that failure is one of the biggest gifts that life can give you in a way, because you get an opportunity to really start anew and bring something into the world that you want to bring into the world. But I saw myself as someone who had lost my way, wasn't needed to go and separate myself from the world and separate myself from life in order to see myself and hear myself again. And really unconsciously, I was running away again. I was kind of going into these patterns of escapism, which is something that I had a lot in my childhood, was escapism, because what I had experienced in my childhood was something that I wanted to get away from. And it was funny that I thought when I rooted in Ibiza that I wasn't escaping anymore. And then I realized that I was then still trying to escape Ibiza, which is somewhere that I was home, because I associate home with being unsafe. And then finally, I end up back in England. And now I've been back here. I've got to really face those fears again and really look at what is it in me that makes me want to do these things, that makes me want to move into this hyper independence and this separation. Because really, who I truly am is pure love, is oneness, is this ability to see the world through this beautiful lens. But there was still this young girl, this version of me that was living in me that did not feel safe at home, the idea of home. So I saw it as a redirection because I came back to my home, place of birth, to England, and I got to see again this pattern of escapism, and I got to really integrate that, come back to love with this teenage girl who always wanted to run away, and transcend that. And to me, you don't overcome your shadow. You don't overcome your darkness, your challenges. You learn to integrate them. And what do I mean by that? What I mean by that is you learn to bring them into the light. Like there's this one line I wrote in one of my poems, which is the brighter the light shines, the more clearly you see your shadow. But it's whether we label our shadow as wrong or bad that actually creates and makes that shadow larger. The more we suppress it, the more we run away from it, the larger it gets, the more noisy it gets. And mine was getting noisy. So I had to really come and look at it and speak to that young version of myself. What do you need from me? What do you need to feel safe again? And what do you need to feel okay in your own skin, feel okay to be at home and really be honest with myself? So yeah, it depends what perspective you look at it through, but the one that I choose to look at it through is that it was redirection from an unconscious part of me, because my intention for my life is to live from my heart, is to live from my soul, what it truly wants. And it was showing me, well, the pathway to that is through connection, through oneness, not through separation.
Can you teach that?
I think it's inside of all of us. I think it's inside of all of us. And I think it's a remembrance. I don't think I'm learning something new. I think I'm remembering who I am. And I think everyone has the ability to remember who they are. I think they need the space to do it. That's why I describe what I do as space, because of the journey I've uniquely been on. I am able to offer people a space where they can look at some of those things that are taking them away from the path that is really of their heart, of what they truly want. Because we can talk about what you want all day, but what do you truly want? What's really underneath that? What's there? And what are the things that are in the way of that? And being really radically honest with yourself about what those things are. And that's something that is, again, very uncomfortable. I don't enjoy to deeply self-reflect all the time and look, but it gives me freedom. It allows me to show up more in who I truly am each day and contribute to the world and contribute to others from that place. And if I want to spend my life doing anything, it's that.
This episode is sponsored by the Halle Financial Team at Expert Lending. Buying a house in today's market is competitive, and you need a lender that can close fast and get you the very best rate. The team is licensed in 48 states and has over 20 years experience in the real estate and lending space, and access to lending rates that most mortgage brokers can't get. I know, because I'm an investor in the team. If you need a mortgage or know someone that does, call or text Kara at 571-271-9086 and talk to a real human who will give you the customer service you deserve. Again, call or text Kara at 571-271-9086. Now back to the show. So if you talk to someone about that, and you described it as remembering who you are,
mm-hmm.
but you've never got in touch with it in the first place, then how do you do that?
I think we're all in touch with it when we're kids, when we're young, and we don't necessarily have a structured way of seeing the world. And I think it's difficult for me to kind of put this into words, but I'll try. It's more of a feeling. It's like, and this depends whether you believe in this or not, but I believe that we are souls having a human experience, that we are the universe experience in itself. So inside, we know. There's just a knowing. There's something that we know inside, and it's a feeling. It's not something that we can maybe express in words, but it's a knowing. And this, so someone will say something and it will just resonate. You just know that there's some truth in it. So I think we all have that. And maybe we've been disconnected from it for a long time, but we all have that. We all have this searching and seeking. And I think that searching and seeking is coming back to who we are. So by remembering, I do think we did know in the first place. We've just forgotten that we did know. And again, it's something that I don't quite know how to express in words right yet. It's something that I express through my poetry, maybe, but it's a feeling of this deep knowing and coming back to that knowing. The more I learn about this or remember about this, whatever word you want to use, the more my awareness expands, the more I'm like, oh yeah, I know these things that I thought I didn't know, but I do know them. It feels like this remembering. And it started off more as learning. It felt like learning. But the deeper I've gone into this work, it's more come as like, yeah, I know this already. I'm just remembering what I know.
So I went back home this past weekend to see my mom for her birthday and cleaning out figuring out what's in our old house there. And I was going through some bins to sort of get inventory on what's there. And I found record albums, which even you probably didn't experience. But for me, that was, I mean, we had albums, you know, and I have all the original albums. If you look at my albums, you understand my childhood. I mean, I have U2 October all the way through the end of U2 to Rush to Pink Floyd to...
Oh, Pink Floyd, yeah.
you keep going through this. And what you're describing is remembering childhood. And I remember my childhood because we didn't have all of the internet and the computers. And I mean, I had a racing game that was a tape that actually went on two spools and you would move the car back and forth. And it was sort of crazy. And you look back on that. And I wonder if kids today who grew up with a device, I mean, the kid, I don't know what age that started, but there is and I don't know that it's a generation, but there's a definite point where that year or thereabouts that year, children started growing up with a device. I mean, they started putting devices in the back of the car. We didn't have devices in the back of the car. In fact, Oddly enough, we were riding all the way in the back of the station wagon without a seatbelt, but we entertained ourselves and we had, in your words, space to be ourselves and discover who we were because there weren't distractions. And I wonder if that's possible anymore. Even dating is different. This whole idea that you can swipe like, hey, it sounds cool. And me looking back saying, oh man, that would have been so easy, right? I get to hook up and all I got to do is swipe and meet up. Like, that's awesome, which is a lot of hormones speaking. It's 22 maybe and younger, but, and maybe even later. But we had to figure out how to talk and interact with humans. And a lot of that was awkward in looking, but having the opportunity to look back on that. All of the things that you're saying, if a person never gets in touch with it, they'll become so lost that they'll never even know what you're talking about means.
I don't think you can ever be lost, really. I don't think you can be
really
lost. I think in the mental concept, in the mind, that you can be lost, but truly, I don't think we're ever lost. And I think if you feel like you're lost, you're in a space of transition in your life. And I don't think you need to have an experience necessarily of something. This is just my opinion, but I don't think you need to have an experience of something in your life to know something. So well, what do I mean by that?
Well, how do you know who you... So what I mean by lost, because now we're, I mean, this discussion is a tough one because you got to really define words, don't you, Emma? The lost is if you don't know who you are and you're not in touch with that self that you've described that you can remember as a kid, I would describe it as lost, mainly because you don't have the ability to reach back and say, and look at yourself in a picture as a kid and say, I remember what that felt like or who I was and or the experiences. So you could describe it maybe, I don't mean it as in lost, but a person will not have a foundation to reach back on that anchors them because they inherently never experienced it.
Yeah. I don't think you need to experience it to have the foundation. I think it's encoded in all of us on a soul level. And that's the way I see the world. I think that the human experience is a beautiful one that can shape us and that can provide the foundations for things that we want to experience in our life. So, for example, someone like me, I want to experience a loving, committed relationship. I did not have foundations of that in my childhood at all to learn from. But there's a knowing in me that can feel that that is possible for me, even though I haven't experienced it, even though I haven't seen it directly, because I know myself as a soul and know that I have everything I need inside of me. And when I say everything I need inside of me, it doesn't mean that you don't need the outside world. It means that you start with noticing where those feelings exist within you and then asking, what is the intentional action that allows me to experience what's inside, outside? So I could always feel that I wanted that committed partnership, but I had no evidence of it in my childhood whatsoever. So what did I do? I created the evidence for myself as I got older. I started exposing myself to environments and connecting with people who had long relationships, who were in committed partnerships. I worked with coaches that worked specifically in this world, in relationships, so that I could give myself evidence and examples that it is possible for other people, even if they didn't have foundations for it, or if they did have foundations for it. So I started to expand my awareness through looking in the outside world, but it started from inside. It started from this feeling of like, all around me, I can see really difficult marriages from my parents, but that's not my reality. I just knew it wasn't going to be that way for me. So in order for me to embark on a new journey, choose something different, it started from trusting that feeling inside, trusting that voice that said, no, there's something different for you. So I didn't have the foundations to go and look back from my childhood to create that for myself. And I'm still in the process of really letting go of a lot of beliefs, like we all are, of like, this is possible for me. But it really took me starting from the feeling inside of this is possible. Where did that feeling come from? Well, it didn't come from the foundations of my childhood. To me, it came from something far deeper, of something of almost before this lifetime, before as a soul, as knowing I'm part of the universe, of knowing I'm infinitely abundant, infinitely love. That's who I am at a core level. My human experience has shown me the opposite. Okay. My human experience has shown me that as a child, but that doesn't mean that I have to fall into that life as well. And I think it takes awareness and practice to choose a different way. It's not like I just felt that feeling and then all of a sudden I'm in a beautiful, loving, committed relationship. No way. It took me taking the steps, facing all the fears, working with myself on a deep way, in a deep way to choose a different way. But where did that feeling come from? To me, it came from something that I can't put into words.
Are you able to have that type of relationship now?
Nearly. I'm getting there, I think. Still, it's still, you know who I am able to have that relationship though, is with myself. I have such an unconditional love connection to who I am. And I know that what is inside is reflected outside. So if I have that inside now and I feel that inside, then the reflection will show up outside in the right person. And what I am working with right now, or feeling into myself with right now, is the ability to receive. So a lot of us, we are, particularly from my background, it was very much do, 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 go out and get, chase. And in order for me to really let in this partnership now, it's about opening my ability to like allow myself to receive the love that I am. Because we can put ourselves, like I put myself into an experience of life where I lived independently. I grew my own business. I built so many beautiful connections in my life. And I really got to feel how loved I was through these different people. But something about it being a partner felt extra scary because I didn't have those original foundations, you know? So really, like, once you've kind of done the work, so to speak, done those things within yourself, it's really about allowing yourself to receive that. You've done all these foundations, all this like investment, time, in energy into yourself. So then it's just about letting it in. So for me now, it's about letting it in. And I think life has the best timing for us. And by life, I mean there's something inside that knows, that chooses.
So practically speaking, what would you say to someone who's listening to this, who said, Emma, this sounds awesome. You're a free spirit. You're following your heart. You're living in Ibiza. You're letting all this happen. But I live in a really bad part of town, and I am surrounded by a lot of negative energy. And I mean, that would be just, like, using our words quite candidly, just a rough way of living. I was in New York this past weekend, and it was, I don't know if I use the word startling, Emma, but reminded me of, one, how lucky some of us are, and two is just how other people live. So if I took you with me and we walked through some of these neighborhoods, I don't know that how this is received. So do you have any practical advice of someone listening to say, hey, this is all cool, man, like, get in touch with yourself, but I got to pay mortgage next month. I got to figure out how I'm going to get my kids to school. I got to figure out how I'm going to get gas in the car. I mean, there are these other things in life that I say get in the way, but are required for human existence.
Yeah, definitely. I don't have the solution for that. I only journey. I only have my journey, and I can share my journey and my gift. And when I talk about these things, you don't hear the hardships and the challenges that I walk through. And you don't hear the times where I couldn't pay my bills the next day and couldn't couldn't do what I wanted to do and was in environments that were really difficult and challenging for me. But I also recognize how and where I was born has privilege too. So the words that I'm speaking can't speak to everyone. They can ignite something inside of you that makes you want to put yourself in environments to make changes. But I deeply believe that it takes us as individuals becoming empowered in ourselves. And becoming empowered in ourselves is through our own awareness, and through our own awareness, creating from the inside out. I don't believe that we're powerless. I believe we're all powerful beings. I believe that we are all powerful beings who have the ability to choose. There are people in dire circumstances and situations that have way more roadblocks than I ever did because of where they were born, or because of the information that they received, or the way that they grew up. So I am aware that I'm very privileged with the life that I had and the tools and resources that I had available to me. And at the same time, I'm not going to teach in a different way, because the way that I share is there for the people that are in the place to receive it. So I can't adapt and adjust the way that I share to meet for everyone, because I'm not going to be for everyone, but I will be for the people that are open to receive it. And when people are open to receive it and work with me, that has a ripple effect. So I see, like, I like to work with, personally, I end up bringing lots of different people into my life, but I really like to work on a one-to-one basis with people that are sort of managers and creatives and entrepreneurs who have this position whereby you change this one little thing in the way that they show up in the world. They're more connected, they're more empowered, and that has a top-down approach that impacts all the people in their world, in their environment. And I don't know, like, what it is about the way that I do things, but I know that the way I do things is true to me. And I think if every individual is doing what's true to them, then we can impact the world. You have people that what's true to them is to go to these countries and or go to work directly with these people in homeless shelters or wherever they may be in the world, right? Whatever issue there is, there's people there that are directly doing that. And that is amazing. They're doing the outward work, but my work is here from inside to work with the people that are wanting to do the work inside. And I don't think we should ever try to adjust who we are to, like, yes, it doesn't come across as practical, but when you work with me, the practical just comes from the inside out. Like, that's what happens. But I'm not going to be there to show you I know the way, because I don't know the way. I don't have all the resources. I don't have the tools. I can't tell you what the answers are. You know the answers for yourself. But so what I can offer to people listening, saying, okay, but I've got bills to pay, I've got this happening, asking yourself what you truly need in this moment is one of the biggest questions that I will always ask myself. Like, what do I truly need right now? And where is my focus? Where is my attention? So when I was in positions where, you know, I had bills to pay and I couldn't pay them, if I was fully powerful and fully resourced, what would I know, or what things would be available to me if I knew that and if I believed that? And you'd be amazed at, by expanding your awareness a tiny bit more, how many more options come into your awareness as possible. And look at the connections that you have around you. I would not be where I am without the people that are around me, like the connections that I have in my life, my network. So that is the best practical tools someone like me could give to someone. And again, it's, if you don't know that individual's exact experience, it's difficult to create this kind of blanket approach for everyone, because we can't try to make ourselves be accessible to every single person. It would exhaust us. It exhausted me, actually. You know, I wanted to help everyone. And then I realized, oh, I'm here to be a lighthouse for the people whose boats want to come my way. But if I suppress my own natural way of showing up, then I'm not doing any good to the world and to those people.
What's your relationship with money?
Oh, relationship with money. That has been a ride, to say the least, a roller coaster. I used to have awful awful relationship with money whereby, and this is what I learned growing up, that you only need to survive on what you have. Like, what you have is enough and that's okay. So I always grew up with this mentality of, if I've got enough to get by, then that's it. And you have to work hard, really hard, and exhaust yourself. So one of the things I was doing was working 13 hours a day, 13 days a week in construction when I lived in Australia, because it was making me a lot of money at the expense of my body, at the expense of my mental health, at the expense of my well-being. So this is kind of the relationship that I had with money through the conditioning of my childhood, through what I was exposed to growing up. And then I moved to the other end of the spectrum, which was, I'm going to become a millionaire in 1 month, and went to really spiritual, and the spiritual way of looking at money. Like, I'm just going to manifest all this money and I'm going to, like, yeah, I'm going to make it happen. And no, like, you know, this thing, which again is another form of escapism from. And then it's fluctuated between lots of different areas. But now I would say my relationship with money has become one of recognizing that it is a neutral energy that is there to serve us if we choose it to be of service for us. So how do I want to contribute the work to the world? But can I do that if I'm not supported and resourced financially? And how do I support myself financially? Well, you can go at it at the approach that I did, which is work hard and make it happen. But now I'm trying, which I did for a long time, and I made a lot of money. And then I let it all go. It didn't work because it wasn't really true wealth. To me, true wealth is letting yourself be resourced by knowing that you're already infinitely abundant. You're already infinitely resourced inside of you. So money will show up for people that truly believe that. So yes, you can go about it in this way of hard work and making it happen. But my way of now is that, can my being be enough? Can my presence be enough? Can what I do in this world, my contribution to this world, be enough to financially resource me? And this is a new thing I'm practicing, and it's really difficult. But the more I'm seeing that money is there to support me and nourish me, my life, but also be a tool that I can use to resource and nourish and contribute to other people's lives, to the world around me, the more that I see that money is not something to be rejected, avoided. Money is not something to grasp onto, to be attached to. Like, if I have no money, then I'm nothing. That's also another trap that you can fall into. Or, I need everything in order to feel safe. Money is there to, it's a tool, it's a resource, but it starts from inside of you. And that's my perspective on it.
I think there's this narrative lately that making a lot of money is bad. I think that's problematic.
It depends on the intention, I think.
Intention.
I think if your intention is to make money in order to fund things in the world that are going to contribute to people suffering and people feeling like they are out of place in this world, then the intention of money, the way money is going to be used, would not be fulfilling or create more peace in the world. Whereas if your intention is to create systems and structures that allow people to thrive, not only survive, you know, debt, for example, like, what is that doing? That's just literally crippling people by giving them these things and with not the resources to actually know how to use it intentionally. Whereas if we're using a credit card to intentionally invest in our business, to grow our business because we have the intention to serve other people, then it's going to be good for us. So I think the intention by which we use money is the way in which it will serve the world. So making money is not a bad thing at all. I think being a millionaire, being a billionaire is not a bad thing. But what is your intention for being there? Is it to showcase who you are? Is it coming from a place of ego? Or is it coming from a place of to be of service to not only yourself and your lifestyle, but also to those around you and to contribute to the world around you?
Why do you believe that, or is it of your opinion at the moment, because things change, that I mean, why is it bad to, what if I just want to make money because it keeps score and I want to do my own thing? For instance, mm-hmm. a lot of people criticized Steve Jobs because he didn't give away his money, and people somehow decided that they had a right to tell him what to do with the money that he earned mm-hmm. and took risks, very high risks and hard work to get.
Mm.
I find it problematic that people believe that they can tell other people what to do with the, I hesitate to say success, but the things that they accomplish and achieve and are rewarded for. And so what? So somebody doesn't want to do that. Why does that make them any better or worse?
I don't know how to fully answer that question, but what's coming to me when I listen to you speak is we never know. We can't comment or give our opinion unless we know someone's experience or someone's true story. So, for example, when you watch the news, you're not being fed the full truth, much of the truth at all. But we create opinions from it straight away. And from that, people then base their whole lives on those opinions, right? So, yes, there are people that hold these opinions, and I would be more interested and curious as to why they hold those opinions about these individuals rather than the opinions themselves. So, for example, if someone's looking at, let's take Steve Jobs, as you said, and saying he shouldn't be doing that with his money. Interesting. Why are they saying that? What in their experience, in their life, has led them to believe that they should be looking at someone else and judging someone else? And really, what I found through my experience, through my own judgments that I've held, is that often we're judging ourselves and we're projecting it onto someone else, or we're in our own shame and our own pain, and we're trying to find a way to outsource that and put it somewhere else so we don't have to actually experience it. So yes, you can look at it from the lens of why do people have these opinions, like people should be able to do what they want. But I take an approach of curiosity of the individuals that are actually holding those opinions and asking, what is it that is in them? What tension is in them that thinks that they have these opinions? And can we look at them still through the lens of love? Can we look at them still through this ability to see, oh, they're hurting. They're just hurting. And they're trying to find somewhere to put that pain.
Do you think it's entitlement?
Define what you mean by that.
They believe that someone shouldn't have some amount of money or something that they don't have, and that by some person, energy, God, that they should be entitled to have those things too, simply because mm-hmm. they exist on Earth.
I think, I don't know how to answer that question again. So I'm going to speak from my experience. And I would say that when I was in this position, I was looking at these people thinking, what's different about me that means that I can't experience true wealth? What's different? Why am I different? And what makes them a good, better at what I do, or better than me, in order to receive all of that wealth? Like, what makes them different? And then I sort of realized it's in my belief that they're different. Everyone's different in terms of their uniqueness, their gifts, the way they see the world. But underlying that, at the core, we're the same. If you look at life through the eyes of unity, consciousness, of oneness, there isn't separation in us. And if you see someone and put them on a pedestal above you, then that's always going to be something that's far, far away from you. It's never going to be something that you can experience in your life, because you're outsourcing your power. You're saying that only they can have that thing. I can't. So I'm going to sit and I'm going to complain about that. And I get that. I've been there. I totally get people feeling that way, especially when you're exposed to environments that say that it's not possible for you. And it takes a lot of facing your own fears and actually practicing a different way to choose a new set of beliefs that says that, no, that is possible for me. So I wouldn't use the word entitlement. I would use the word, I would frame it as when you are limited in your awareness and your perception of the world, then you're going to see that perception. You're just going to see other people as separate from you. You're going to see other people as they're doing something better than me, they're whatever it may be. But if the more you expand your awareness, the more you expand your perception and see that there are other lenses that you can look at that person through or that company through, the more that that can start to become a possibility for you too. And the more you see that actually these people, and not everyone who has money is doing it with a good intention or with an intention from the heart. So to me, it's not really good or bad. I don't want to say good or bad. For me, it's like, are you intentionally doing that from the heart? Like, is the wealth that you're creating for yourself, is that from your heart? Is it because you want to experience yourself, the joy in life? Like, that's not a bad thing if you're building your wealth to experience more joy in your life. But is it coming from your heart, or is it coming from a place of, I want to show how great I am at everything and let everybody else see how great I am? Like, where is that intention? Like, that's not from the heart, really, is it? That's creating more suffering in the world.
Is it though? I mean, so just to unpack that a little bit.
Yeah,
that could be seen as a little judgmental because everybody's different.
It is judgmental.
I guess that's the end of that. But that, I mean, truthfully, everybody's different, right? Like,
yes.
Reason I say that is because it actually reminds me when we were doing, this was years ago, we were doing a lot of online marketing, and I was selling a course, which I now give away, on how to write a business plan. I actually wrote a book on it. It's coming out soon, but how to write a business plan in 11 slides. And one of the things in the long form sales letter, that the last item on one of this, and this was a lady, Chelsea, who's a really awesome marketing lady, and she's actually been on the podcast before, but she put in there when she wrote it, she's like, why would Brandon do that? I was giving something away that didn't seem reasonable, which I would, to be honest with you, give most things away to help people if they're actually willing to do it. But she said, well, and truthfully, Brandon just likes the attention. And I read that and I was like, you know what? That's actually true. I like the attention. And why does the world make people who enjoy receive, and not attention for like doing something stupid. I didn't set myself on fire, like do something crazy, right? Like I run a podcast. I mean, let's just be honest about ourselves, right? Like, it gives me some sort of satisfaction that I've given something that someone would recognize me, that I've delivered some sort of value that's helped them, offered. Sometimes people don't agree with me and that's fine too, but at least there's a different perspective with some generally rationale behind it of how that works. And I guess, Emma, what I'm asking is like, why is that? So if you take the attention and you move it to wealth, and someone just says, oh, I just want to be rich. And now, could they be compensating for something in their life? I think we would all, those of us who may have a psychology degree or some sort of insight that through work you've done on yourself, then you'd say, yeah, they probably are trying to compensate for something. But sometimes people are just different. They just want that, right? That's them. It's like being an introvert or extrovert. Some people just love the interaction with people. And people like me who are actually introverts, I enjoy the interaction, but I'm extremely exhausted afterwards, right? It drains the energy. So people are different in that way. So
I think that's why good or bad or right or wrong, maybe not the right words to use here. And we can get like into the semantics of every word that we use. But I think to me, it always still comes back to intention from the heart. And when I listen to you share about intention, I still feel how the intention is still to serve yourself, and to see that by contributing to others, you're receiving something good for yourself. To come at it from, and there's nothing still wrong with it, of recognizing where you might be trying to get attention from another purpose, maybe more from the ego. There's nothing wrong with that. It serves as well. But it depends on the life you want to live. I want to live a life from the heart. I want to live from love. I want to contribute to others, contribute to myself from that place, from my heart, and be of service in that way to myself and to others. And I think, again, this is speaking from my experience and my awareness that I have right now, is that a life that is really fulfilling, like truly fulfilling and truly joyful, true wealth, will always be in intentions from the heart, and one that's sustainable as well. I think when it comes from a different place, I don't know.
Well, you added that sustainable on, which just like unpacks a whole nother five episodes. But I think wealth, happiness, being happy, and those things is actually wanting what you have. I've been trying to write a book on it for probably 5 years. And
wanting what you have. What do you mean by that?
Wanting what you have at this moment. And most people don't want what they have. Whether that is, and I've read every happiness book, and I am generally happy because I do want what I have. I also accept who I have. And that doesn't come overnight. It comes from like a lot of work, but I've never felt more. I also think it comes with a little bit of age. I mean this with the utmost respect. Most people's, I mean, it's just a fact that the human brain does not really fully develop until humans in general are around 25 years old. So from this time up until that age, you are trying to figure, I mean, you are running on hormone. There's just so many evolutionary things happening in you that you're trying to figure out, and you're experiencing these things for the first time. You're having physical attraction to whomever, and you're trying to understand what that is, and you're trying to get an idea of this concept of love, which people talk about, but no one can define, quite frankly. They will say, you'll know it when you feel it. Well, that's not a lot of good direction for somebody, you know, whose hormones
feeling
are
everything.
Yeah, exactly. Like you're like, hey man, I just slept with this person and it felt good. Like, is that love? And you know, and you're like, I did it 5 times. It really felt good. I mean, there's a lot to sort of understand there. And I think as you get older, you have the ability to sort of have some perspective on all of that. So getting to know who you are is not an easy path. I forget where I was going with all that, Emma. You
just let it go wherever it wants to go.
Probably. I guess one thing that I was wondering is we've said this, that you follow your heart, but if you can't define, and I do know that I ask questions over and over in different ways. So I've already asked this question, but we're talking about it. And if I were a listener, I would be trying to figure out. Emma talks about the heart. Brandon, they're all talking about spirituality and all this stuff, but how do you actually like get in touch with that? And some of the things that you've said, you were going to go to Colombia to live in the jungle and be alone. Sometimes being alone and being quiet. I mean, there's a place in Argentina that I think about sometimes when things get crazy, because it was so quiet and so no light pollution. I mean, you can see the Southern Cross. I mean, you're in the Southern Hemisphere, but you can see the Milky Way. I mean, it is that dark. Beautiful. And quiet. Like, there's no road noise. I mean, you really don't understand this until you get in a place like that, how much road noise and things like that are really affecting you. And I had another friend who went fishing, and he stayed in a tent for 3 days, camping by himself on a river. And he said he lost his mind because it was so quiet. And all of a sudden, when you're in those situations, you really have to face who you are. There's no distraction. And do you have any way to describe that? I mean, of what the heart is? because as you know, that changes. I think that's where I was going with this. Pre-25, heart is confused with hormones and development. And then you sort of get to a place where you're like, okay, I can think about this in a different way. And I mean, how do you describe being able to live from the heart or live with intention from the heart? Like, where is that voice or feeling?
I think it's really something I've learned to practice through making lots of wrong choices. And I don't mean wrong in the sense of they were not right for me in the grander scheme of things on a bigger picture, but making choices that didn't make me happy, that didn't fulfill me, listening to my mind, to other people's opinions. And I think I've been in a lot of difficult, challenging situations in my life, a lot of traumatic situations, like many of us. And the one thing that always walked me through that was this small, quiet something that lived inside of me. And when I was younger, it would come out through poetry. I used to write a lot, and I would see what I was trying to say in words, or what I was trying to get across about the feelings that were inside of me. And I would see them written in art. So that's how I learned to hear myself, what was my truth in those moments. And also because truth is also our fears and also our doubts. Everything is there to serve us. Everything is there to be heard and to be seen. So it's all the same thing in a way. It's all your heart, because your fears are going to guide you away from something maybe that's not quite right for you, or you're not quite ready for you. So I think for me, learning to understand all these voices in separation through these different experiences, like what is the voice that doubts, what is the voice that fears, has been through my meditation practice, has been through stillness, has been through silence, but has also been when I'm trail running, when I'm doing things that I really love, when I'm in the water and I'm swimming and I'm snorkeling. And I think what really, I guess, opened me to know the voice of my heart is simply through giving myself the space to explore and hear all these voices. And I tend to receive them in more in words, in writing, or through, like, I have God knows how many journals through my life, and through listening. Some people have it received in a different way. They might see visuals, they might know things. But the only way that I know the way that I receive is through practice and through choosing to continue to show up to those practices every day. And I've watched how that's evolved so much over time, and I know it will continue to do so. Listening to the heart is not something we just get to and now we're done and now we're perfected in this area. It's something that we do throughout our lives as we grow, as we evolve. But when I look back at my teenage self, and, you know, you talk about the hormones that are involved and all of this, but I was always listening to my heart then. I just didn't really know it because I was following this quiet something that kept nudging me into a different direction than the direction that was prescribed to me. It's in the one that was, and of course I chose that many times, but when I chose that, I saw that I didn't feel very happy. I didn't feel very fulfilled. So I had the evidence of choosing a different way. So from my experience, it's really about giving yourself the space to have the experience and giving yourself the space to expand your awareness. Experience and awareness are two things that come combined. And then giving yourself the space, by that I mean maybe you journal, maybe you work with a therapist, maybe you explore different sports that really give you that space to listen to yourself. So there's many different ways that you can start to listen and start to practice, but it's unique to all of us. But you need to actually decide to do that and continuously show up for it, even when it's uncomfortable. Because when you first, like, I've been meditating for nearly 10 years now, and I hated it when I started. I absolutely hated it. Couldn't sit for more than 5 minutes. Now to me, it's like It's like brushing my teeth. It's something I show up for every day because that time is intentional. And I see how that time really creates the foundations for a life that feels very fulfilling to me. And maybe meditation is not your thing. Maybe it's something else. Like I also dance. That's another way that I listen. So I can't remember what the question was, but
well, I'll ask you how to basically a system to get in touch with your heart. I think you did a good job.
There's different systems. Find the one that works for you. And when you, if you can't find the one that works for you, just explore different ones, explore different ways until something clicks. And when that clicks, double down on that and continue to practice it.
Yeah. I actually remembered the question you asked me, which was what happiness is wanting what you have. And I'm going to attribute that not to the energy.
And I would say it's also okay to want more than what you have.
Happiness?
Because we can look at what we have and we can say we're happy, but maybe there's something there that we're not entirely happy about that needs changing.
So, yeah, I'll unpack it. And I'm going to blame the lack of caffeine and not the energy of the conversation, although it's a fun conversation.
It's always a bit wild with me.
Well,
you never know what I'm going to say.
It's pretty dangerous because if that's the case, that's what people say about me too, Emma. So this is hopefully it making sense for listeners. Wanting what you have does not mean that it brings you happiness. And I know this is going to get tricky with words, but the problem with not wanting what you have, regardless if it's good or bad, is that if you don't want what you have, which maybe in another way for someone to better understand it might be owning what you have, meaning you could have just broken up with your significant other and be a mess. Until you want what you have, which is that experience, you will not be happy. You will not be free to move to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that you don't have goals, that you want other. Want is a bad word.
Desire.
Yeah, or attain, right?
Attain,
you have goals that you want to attain. But until you get comfortable with wanting what you have, you can't move forward. Whether that's good, whatever adjective you want to use to describe your current situation, good, bad, marvelous, horrible, traumatic. I mean, what I've learned from talking with many people and my own life is everybody, Emma, rich, poor, black, white, Martian, I don't know. Everybody has a sad story for the most part. Truthfully, everybody has a sad story because life's not just perfect. I'm not saying that there's some people who is like, oh my God, it all worked out, right? I mean, and it's across the spectrum from the very rich to the very poor. Everybody and everybody in between. There is something in their life that they've struggled with. And, you know, I'll use an example. So I had an ACL reconstruction at 13 years old, which is the ACL surgery is probably only 30 years old. It was very early when they figured out how to fix a knee. And I was very young to have a knee injury. And that knee injury, especially when it's not a secret to any listeners, listen to many episodes and maybe not to you that, you know, I have a lot of energy and I am a hard charger. I'm a type A person who wants to win. I compete every day, not against people, although sometimes that's what it turns out to be, but mainly with myself and trying to be that best version every day. And whatever genes I have, that's what makes me who I am. And I'm always trying to do that. So that changed the trajectory of and I sort of sounds crazy, but at 13 years old in Maryland, of all places in the United States, lacrosse happens to be a really big thing. And at 13, you're starting to get recruited to go to high school, literally. And then from there, college. I mean, it is that ecosystem. It may even be more pronounced now than it was. And until I came to terms with and wanted that quote unquote bad knee, or changed knee, I never could move on. In fact, there was a lot of work that I did with a sports psychologist that would suggest that I was almost purposely hurting myself, meaning like purposely missing the goal. possibly because of self-sabotage to make six excuses why that didn't happen. And the moment, which I can't remember the exact moment, Emma, but the moment that I wanted what I had gave me the space, in your words, to actually move forward and do what I could with what I had where I was. But if you don't want what you have, you will never be happy. I mean, you will shoot for the next thing with the hope. This is my theory after a lot of whiteboard sessions, reading a lot of books, and actually scientific studies like that they've done on this sort of thing. I think the book is just not going to happen because my simple words would be, want what you have. And maybe I need to write like three paragraphs to unpack that, which we just talked about. But once you want what you have the space to become who you are and who you want to be. So that was my answer to your question.
I love that. It brings me to this, like what I'm feeling is this presence, this real presence with life. Because when you're present, you can see all the possibilities that are available to you. Whereas when you're trying to get somewhere, you have this anxious energy in you. And I know this from experience. And that then clouds your own ability to be and really receive what's around you.
Yeah, that's the idea. Because when you don't want what you have, you are covering up through whatever it is, anxiety, escapism. This can happen through, it can happen through sex, drugs, exercise, all of it. You just pick whatever you want, right? Even things that are good for you, like exercise.
Totally. I mean,
love. Like you could channel this love into a place that's actually not allowing you to want what you have, and you're trying to do this. And basically what it does is it clouds it. And I really think that if you break it down, wherever you are in life at that moment, maybe you saw me a little bit, but for those only listening didn't see, Emma probably did, is, you know, I cringe a little bit at the present idea. And the reason I have a friend who is a Navy SEAL, and I always am impressed with military people. I'm impressed with a lot of people, but went to the Naval Academy, and they're very well read, Emma, like in history and in philosophy, because a lot of that is instilled in them as it relates to the art of war. Because the art of war is more than just tactics on a battlefield, right? It's thought. It's anticipation. There's a lot more into it. But anyway, he always said to me, Brandon, words really do matter. And in this type of discussion, I think they really do. Now, whether I think you're in my job, I think we've done a good job, Emma.
I think so.
Is describing what we mean by those words. But present seems to have the idea that we are in the moment, right? Everybody says be in the moment. And I think that sometimes you need to revisit your past to remember where you came from. It doesn't mean that that's who you are. That means that all of these things made you who you are now. And you may want to be someone in the future, which you can be, anybody you want to be. Now, I do believe inherently what you've said. There is an inherent self. That's what makes us all individual. Otherwise, we'd just be robots. So there's always going to be those nuances. But the present part, and I don't know how you feel about this, I think your word space is very good, Emma. So it doesn't give you the space to set goals for the future necessarily. But wanting what you have means that you actually have to deal with the present without, air quotes, being present necessarily, and gives you the space to at that point roam and move forward, if that's the right way. I mean, there's only one way to move. Like, because we don't get time, at least as far as I know, unless you've got some magical thing, which I wouldn't be surprised of reading about you and getting to know you, that maybe you have some way to go back. But it's only going forward. Like, time only goes one way. So if you can do that, I think, and I think that that is where a lot of what you've described, where fear, shame, disappointment comes out. And if you can work through those things, and sometimes it does, some people, I had a conversation recently, a friend actually was on the podcast and he said, Brandon, psychedelics have done that for me. And he had at one point said, like, maybe you should do psychedelics, like maybe your best work. And I was like, that's not the tool for me. I tend to do nothing in moderation. So if I started doing psychedelics, I'm probably going to do a lot of them. And I don't know whether that's good or bad, but I do know that exercise, which arguably is probably the best drug on the planet. I mean, if you think about this, Emma, it is scientifically proven that exercise, not the 7-minute workout that's advertised on Instagram, that's going to give you the 6-pack. Okay. Just for
or the booty.
The booty. Is that what they say?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not going to give you that. Like, I'm talking about some prolonged exercise, like riding your bike for 90 minutes, 2 hours, things like that. That sort of, and there is some evidence that maybe 30 minutes. So I don't want to suggest that you have to be that extreme, but that what that releases in your body can, I hate the word cure, but can fix, or whatever the right word is, depression.
Shift.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Shift a person from a depressed state into a more euphoric state or a happier state. So just think about that, that someone's, you know, let's just agree that depression is really on one end, a really far end of a spectrum that is not necessarily comfortable. And then there's this ultimate happiness. So it can actually bring someone out of those depths into this. So if you're moderately, like, nobody's going to be perfect, like accepting what you have is hard, and you might not accept everything at the abundance of everything at that moment. But if you're like halfway decent and then you do something like exercise, it like propels you so far forward and gives you space in many ways. You know, I use space by just really working hard and putting myself at a place heart rate wise where my body can't think of anything else but surviving, which frees the subconscious. Now, I'd be lying to say that it doesn't also release dopamine and norepinephrine and all these other chemicals that make you feel good. It's like cold plunge, right? But I don't know. That was a really long rendition on happiness and and where I've found. And I think in many ways, Emma, what you are saying and practicing in a different way.
Yeah, I think we all have our own way. And I think the best thing we can do, like, I love listening to you speak, and the questions you ask challenge me to stay in my way and speak from my way, right? Because we can hear the way that other people see the world and their perspectives and how they show up to the world through whatever. And there was that moment you caught me where I was in judgment for another person's way. And that was really interesting because, and I think that's, it's about really choosing our way, like discovering it and trusting it and then embracing it. My way is, like, I love art. I love poetry. I like to speak this way. And if I am more in my light in that, then I encourage other people to be more in their light of whatever that is, whether that's from the mind more. From, like, I've spoke to people who are completely different way of seeing the world than me. But the way I'm able to connect with them is that we both stand empowered in the way that we choose to experience life and the way that we choose to talk and the way that we show up, because we're not rejecting who we are. We're not rejecting the true self. We're showing up in it fully, like you are doing, Brandon, and you're showing up fully in yourself. And that's why I'm receiving your questions, and it's empowering me to show up fully more in myself and speak how I speak without limiting that, as I would have probably done in the past, to be more acceptable or to be seen better or to project a certain image. So really, it's about honoring that we all have this unique way showing up in the world and choosing that. And that's what, to me, is another factor that contributes to your happiness. I was not happy for a long time because I tried to fit in a box that wasn't the box that I wanted to be in. And then when I decided I actually want to say that there's no box and I want to show up how I want to in each moment, life became really beautiful for me.
For listeners who don't know, Emma was in the construction business for 10 years, which you've mentioned, Emma. Was there a moment?
I was in the construction business for 3 years.
Oh, I thought 10 years. Oh, no, sorry.
No. I was in personal development for 10 years.
Oh, okay.
Well, I've been in personal development my whole life, but I guess practicing meditation for 10 years. Yeah.
I think we would agree. We've all been in personal development.
Yeah. Since I set foot on this earth.
Yeah, exactly. You're trying to figure things out. Was there a moment that you're in this construction deal, making a bunch of money, that you just dropped the mic? Or did you think about this? Did you save up money and say, okay, I'm going to buy myself 3 years? One of the things I always ask Emma myself when I hear people speak about, I think that one of the most curious things I am is the story behind the story. It's never what you think it is. And without that context, it really never gives you a playbook of which you can borrow from to adapt the things that work for your life to sort of take those cool things. I tend to believe in sort of Bruce Lee's philosophy of absorb what is useful, discard what is not, add what is unique to your own. And it's sort of the story of this isn't, I've absorbed it that way. I also absorbed it through Greek culture when I studied it in high school, which in Latin, but it's one of the, and this isn't magical, right? We know art is everything in theory, although I'd be interested in your take. I don't know if that's another podcast on like, is there actually a unique thing? I tend to believe there is, but I can't figure out how that works. But anyway, is the story behind the story? Because if you don't know the story behind the story and you just listen to the front end, you can be misled. And you can follow a path that you think existed, which may not be a good one, or may not be the one that actually happened for that person to get there. So where I was getting at is I always wonder like how people make money, because you do have to make money unless you've inherited an enormous amount of money or you're just going to live on couches your whole life, which, you know, is possible, but, you know, it seems that in itself doesn't seem stressful to me. I mean, you may say I'm just being free spirit and I show up and somebody brings me in, but you know, there's a lot of bets that you better be willing to sleep on the street that night too, because sometimes that moment doesn't show up. So how did you approach it when you, I guess, dropped the mic or quit or whatever?
Yeah. Well, when I worked, I always worked really hard. My whole life, you know, at university, I had 6 jobs. I was always doing random freelancing things. And I always worked hard, especially on the solar farm. And I made a lot of money. And I saved solar panels.
Oh, solar farm. Solar.
Everyone thinks I say soda when I say soda. On one of your things you did it. Was it spinach farm or something? I was like, oh, yeah, I get it.
Yeah,
on your journey.
Yeah, on my journey too. Yeah,
spinach sounds a bit more enjoyable. Yeah, so I always, you know, and I made a lot of money, and that money brought me really beautiful experiences. You know, I went traveling with that money. I got to move to Spain with that money and, you know, put a deposit on a place and got to do loads of beautiful experience, start my business. And then I had, you know, financial support from my parents for a while alongside, I was, you know, working, kind of went to more part-time based work and they were supporting me. And then when I started to, you know, make money through my business, well, you know, that was supporting me, but it was still all, and this is just me speaking from my way of seeing the world and my experience, but it was still built on this foundation of I need to try really hard and put loads of effort in, even if I don't like something. And I don't mean just like dislike, like, you know, a small dislike, even if it feels like against my being in a way. And it's taken me a long time to discern, you know, what's the things that are truly calling to me and what's the things that are things that I'm happy to do because, you know, they support me, and what are the things I really, it's not my gifts. It's not how I want to show up in the world. And I was, so all of this money was built on those foundations of really trying hard. So when I let go of my business, and all the time it would, I would invest loads of money and make loads of money, and then I would always go back to zero. I'd always go back to nothing in my bank account. I'd always end up at this place of just nothing again. And I realized it was a mixture of that I didn't have the right education in how to work well with money and how to really understand how to invest my money and how to put it into the right places within my business. And also, I was still trying super hard to make money because it was trying to fill a hole or something of like, it was, I was trying to run away from the experience I had when I was younger, of the beliefs I had when I was younger. So when I let go of everything, it was to really like come to terms with that. I wanted to try a different way. And I want, the way that I want to try is the way that I'm trying, or not even trying, the way that I'm living and experiencing is, if I'm in all of my essence, in all that I am, true to myself, living from this place, and the action that I take is from that place, from really from that place, the action that I take, the intentional action that I bring into the world, the things that I do. So from this place, I wrote my poetry book and self-published my poetry book. I trust that that will bring me an enormous amount of abundance financially and in other areas, because it was created from a different place, not from trying really hard or working really hard, but from true joy, from true love of doing what I do. And even the things that I didn't love doing, they supported and nourished the things I loved doing. But I was never doing anything I hated or really disliked or just felt out of like not right for me. And so really it's kind of coming to this thing of like, can I know that I'm infinitely abundant already as I am? And by doing the things that I love with intention, by building from this place, I'm simply experiencing what I already am. And I get that that sounds a little bit strange, but to me, I'm already a multimillionaire. I'm already that. I don't need to look at my bank account to feel that way. I already feel that way. Even though it's not there physically, I feel that way. So the experience will come. But we have this thing in this reality called time. There's some time that it will take before that physically appears in my life. But I no longer want it to physically appear in my life from me trying to get it. I want it to show up because I'm choosing the things, to take action on the things that I truly love, build a life that I love, and live from that place.
Can I offer you an idea to get your reaction on?
Yeah, of course.
Do you think it's a coincidence that your bank account kept going to zero?
No. I think because of my relationship with money, it was obvious that it was going to happen.
I think it was self-sabotage. I think you worked in construction for 3 years. It didn't bring you happiness, so you rejected it. Have you resolved that?
It's interesting you say that. I think it was a rejection. I wouldn't use the term self-sabotage. I would definitely agree with it was a rejection of receiving that money, because that's not the way that I wanted to receive that money. That's not the life that I wanted to continue to live. And I knew that I could create, experience that wealth, but living a different life. But I had to investigate what is the lifestyle I want and choose that lifestyle first. And then choosing that lifestyle, know that I can still experience the same wealth in that area in a different way. So I know I have the ability to create wealth for myself, but I wasn't experiencing the lifestyle that I really wanted to have. Yes, I could continue to create that wealth and stay in the construction industry and then, you know, do it for the next 10 years and then leave and have the lifestyle I wanted. But I was mentally and emotionally and physically exhausted. I don't want to create wealth from that place. I want to be thriving and create well, from that place. So yes, I think it was a rejection. I don't think it was self-sabotage. I think it depends on the way you see that word. I see that word as like more of a negative connotation. I see it as actually I was doing what was best for me, because that road was never going to lead to the lifestyle that I wanted. It wasn't going to be sustainable for me. So I chose the lifestyle. So when I let go of everything, and then when I let go of the business, I chose the lifestyle first. And then now I'm playing with this and let's see what happens.
So that belief of self-sabotage is something that somewhere happened in your life that you've defined it as negative. I could rephrase it and say that it was a learned behavior.
Yes.
You continued to make money. You continued to be unhappy. So what really happened is you didn't want what you had. And then you learned this behavior that every time you had money, you felt unhappy. You quit. You went into your, we'll call it the Emma experience, but it's a spiritual guidance, experience, sort of working with other people. And then every time you got money, not because you consciously understood it, but there's a behavior that happens. It's humans are predictable animals. I say this because it really is. I know people listening to that may make them feel uncomfortable, but humans are extremely predictable animals. They are not much different in many ways than training your dog. You can train humans. There's scientific studies that have been done where professors have trained their students watching them to sit a certain way when they didn't even realize that that was happening, because they were giving reinforcement when they did do things. And that happens in life all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes we have to create, they're not triggers in the way that the society is talking about triggers right now, but you have to create prompts for yourself that change that behavior. Mm-hmm. And then you train yourself that, hey, every time I get money, I'm going to say, wow, this is really awesome. I'm grateful for this and I earn that. And mm-hmm. then you can retrain those beliefs, because mm-hmm. a lot of this stuff is really simple block and tackle. I think, Emma, it's recognizing the behavior that's been created somehow. Sometimes it happens randomly, right? You get burnt and it was a random occurrence, but you felt a certain way and that happened one more time. And all you're doing is strengthening that behavior is what happens. And then that prompt creates that feeling. It's amazing what you can do when you change those things. I read a study, an article once about people come from home from work and they're generally, they were worn out and they were grumpy. But if you created a prompt that the doorway, whether that's coming in from the garage or the outside, whatever that is in your home, that is a prompt that instantly makes you happier.
Mm-hmm.
And now you can condition your behavior based on that prompt. Now, that may sound, maybe to you, Emma, possibly not as deep, but that's how the human brain works.
Mm-hmm.
And if you create that prompt that you walk through that door frame and you've left everything behind, then all of a sudden everything on the inside or from that way forward is changing your state. So I was just listening to your story and I thought that it was interesting that you said that, that you go back to zero, because call it what you want, but it was a behavior that I think was conditioned because you did it for many years, right? You got the money, you felt bad. You got the money, you felt bad. Then you got the money in a different place with your business, but you still felt bad. And the reason is because you didn't undo the behavior.
Yeah, interesting. Because I think I agree with you in some respect. And also I have a slightly different perspective, I think, where I did that way for a long time, where it felt like it was sort of outside in. So looking at my behaviors. So I had therapy from when I was about 14 years old and worked a lot with hypnotherapy and neurolinguistic programming and did a lot of these kind of Tony Robbins approach things. And I still found that even when I would receive things in my life after changing these ways of experiencing, that I still wasn't really happy. I felt like I was in this space of really fixing myself. And that's not to say that that's truth. That's just how I was experiencing it. And it was not fulfilling for me. So what really gave me true peace was more embracing all of this. So this, how I work now with myself is seeing these things and just being able to fully allow them. So if I notice that there's a behavior that you might label as procrastinating or self-sabotage, I welcome that I'm feeling that way. And I look at it and I just simply ask myself, where is the light in this? And so, for example, with procrastinating, maybe I'm not actually in a place right now to actually share that with the world. Maybe it's not the right moment for me to want to do this. Maybe tomorrow, after I've had a bit of rest, what do I really want right now? Or am I avoiding because I'm afraid? Like really asking, like, what is the light in this behavior? What is this behavior trying to show me? And instead of trying to change that behavior, I embrace it. I just witness it as part of the human experience. And then from the inside out, I guess through self-inquiry and through reflection, try to understand what that behavior is asking of me, what it's there for, because usually it's a young version of yourself who is a little bit afraid, or it's actually coming from this like deeper part that wants to be seen inside of you. And maybe just seeing that first and going to that and with love is the only shift that you need to then show up. So I think it's a blend of, I don't think there's one right way. I think it's a blend of everything. Sometimes the way that you're speaking serves me more, going actually directly and, you know, changing what's going on in your neurology essentially and in your DNA. And then sometimes it's more just witnessing what's going on inside of me. And can I just have a conversation with that young version of myself, or that can I just embrace that darkness, that shadow aspect of myself, and see how it's actually serving me?
We forgot to answer a question, if you want to believe this, that we started with.
Yeah, what was it?
It was, I have it written down right here. Why do you think people struggle so much?
If I attribute it, I always speak from my experience and the experience I've got through awareness and witnessing others and hearing other stories, because that's where we can serve it from, right? And I think we struggle so much because we're in conflict with ourselves. We're fighting with what we know inside. We're fighting with the way that we really want to live our lives. And I think we struggle because we look to the outside world for constant confirmation and validation. And there's nothing wrong with that. But when we are trying to create from just looking outside of us and just seeing what's around us, then I don't believe that that brings us real happiness, and that leads us in conflict with what's really true inside. Whereas when we're inside, we start from that place. We start from looking like, what do I really, truly want from my life? And then the outside world becomes this beautiful reflection that offers us the tools, the opportunities, the resources, and the action that comes from that space is inspired. It's intentional. We want to go out and do it because it's actually coming from what's real, the self that lives within us. So I think from my experience, I struggled so much because I was always looking for someone to give me permission to do what I wanted to do the things that I wanted to experience, to live the life I wanted to experience. I was never really asking me. I was always asking other people. And while that's great to see lots of different ways, and like you said, that Bruce Lee philosophy, you know, taking what resonates and leaving what doesn't. When we're young, we don't really have the resources or the tools to discern what's ours and what's not. We take everything on and kind of, we're like a sponge, and then we start living from all this conditioning and all these opinions and things from other people. So I think we're struggling so much because we're believing that everything we've taken on is us. So I think really getting to a point where inside out, meaning we discover, we rediscover, we remember what's in our hearts, who we are at the core, and then we take action and we move from that place and we interact with the people around us, the resources around us, from our knowing, and then we can live from that place of that Bruce Lee quote of really just allowing what's not there for us to fall away and to take on board what is for us. But I think it really takes starting from the inside to have that ability to discern.
I think that's a good summary, Emma, and maybe a good place to sort of wind up.
Yeah,
and you might have already done this, and I don't think I prepared you for this question, but I'm going to ask you anyway, because you seem to be a type of person who can go with it.
Yeah.
Is if you only get to give people three pieces of advice, three tips.
Three tips. Oh,
what do you?
I talk so much. Three.
What? Three? You only get three.
Oh
what
my
you,
God.
What are you gonna? What are you gonna give them?
Don't be afraid to. Just don't be afraid. And if you feel that fear, know that that fear only needs to be loved. Number two, you are okay exactly as you are, and you get to be more at the same time. Have fun. Have fun.
I think those are beautiful three pieces of advice. Where can people who are listening find you, Emma?
Well, right now I've just started my Substack, so that's a good place to come in to connect, because I just sort of let go of Instagram. Wasn't really the place for a writer and an author, so. On my Substack, my podcast, which I finished at the end of last year, but starting again now. It's called Limitless with Emma Evelyn at the moment. So you can go and check that out. And I think my email is probably emma@emmaevelyncampbell.com. That's a good place to connect in with me as well.
Well, we'll put all that in the show notes. Emma, thanks for taking time out of your day to share all this great information and wisdom. It was a really fun conversation.
Thank you, Brandon. Thank you for asking me questions that challenged me. I haven't had a podcast interview like that before. And it really, yeah, just reminded me how empowered I feel to stay in what feels true to me, and also still be able to connect with someone who has a beautiful mind as well. So thank you.
You're welcome. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.